And when you saw what this microbe could do to adults and children, the sort of gross devastation that it could thrust upon their lives. And I think we all remember in the era before there was even AZT available, right, you would see just these wrenching images of people dealing with this.
Right.
What was that? Because you're more than a researcher, you also treat patients.
Right.
What was that like as a doctor to deal
Well,
with?
That for me was a very unique phase in my clinical career, because prior to HIV/AIDS, I had been involved in tackling some very serious and often fatal immunologically mediated diseases, for which I was fortunate enough to be part of a team that developed therapies that turned out actually to be curative, such as certain of the vasculitic inflammatory diseases. So I got used to, over a period of several years before HIV, of deathly ill patients coming in and then turning them around and getting them better. Then all of a sudden HIV/AIDS came along, and it was a period of a few years from the first patient that we admitted to the NIH in the summer and early fall of 1981 until well beyond AZT. Because AZT was a first start, but it certainly wasn't the solution by any means, where I had a good 4 years or so of every patient we brought into the hospital died, because the patient didn't come into the hospital until they were advanced disease with opportunistic infections, because we didn't yet know what the tip of the iceberg was. We knew what the tip was, but we didn't know what the rest of the iceberg was. So we weren't seeing patients the way we do now, who are early on in an infection and still looking well and feeling well. When they got to us, they would generally had one or more opportunistic infections. So as a clinician and as a physician, it was a very heavy period in my career from 1981 through mid-1980s, even to the 1990s. Things improved a bit with AZT, as you could extend life a bit, but then rapidly we became aware that AZT alone was not enough. So we went from complete devastation of everybody dying to the hope that AZT would give us to a realization that we needed to do much better than AZT. It was only until the mid-90s when we had the combinations of drug which were ushered in with the protease inhibitors and then a variety of other drug targets, that after the mid-90s, 95, 6, 7, 8, did you get the feeling that, wow, you know, we still have a long way to go, but at least we're not faced with a situation that every time a patient comes in, we're looking at, you know, some sort of a linear type of a decline in their clinical course. So the 80s, the 81 to 85 were terrible years clinically. 86 to mid-90s were some hope with the drugs that they were starting to be developed, and then you started to get a feel you could do something substantial by the mid-90s.
You strike me generally as someone who's an optimist, so I'm wondering if even from your generally optimistic prism, was there a moment when you felt just totally overcome by despair that...
No. No, as a physician and I, as an infectious disease person who deals daily with diseases that can kill you, not trivial diseases, I never felt a feeling of near overcome with despair. I felt a very heavy feeling for a few years there when every patient that I went into the room and spoke to or interacted with or prescribed some treatment with, you knew deep down, unless something very different happened really soon, that this person was going to die. That is not a good feeling. It was never despair. It was always deep down hoping. And that was the other hat that I wore, was the research hat, that something that we could do with development of drugs or what have you might turn this around. But I don't think I'd ever approach despair at all.